When this news first broke yesterday, I did wonder whether somebody had jumped the gun. Because the only source I could find for this information was Eddie Hearn and an anonymous Top Rank source, which was quoted by ESPN. Because both sides had publicly stated that when the fight gets done, they're all going to come out and announce it together. So I was thinking, why is it only Eddie Hearn and this anonymous Top Rank source? And of course, today we find out that Frank Warren is not happy. He's taking a swipe at Eddie Hearn. He's saying that Eddie Hearn broke his word, basically, coming out to announce the fight by himself rather than collectively. And he is confirming what the Top Rank source said, which is that, yes, the contracts are signed, but a fight is not done because they haven't agreed a site and a date. And they've got 30 days from the signing or the deal could go away, according to the anonymous Top Rank source. So again, that doesn't sound anything like the fight is done. Why would Eddie Hearn come out and say this? Maybe he was just running off at the mouth and talking a bit too much and didn't intend to actually announce it. And the media just took that, and before you know it, it's all over the world. Maybe it was a boo-boo by Eddie Hearn. Then again, maybe it was intentional. If it was intentional, what could be the reason? Is it a case of Eddie Hearn's ego being so big and him being so thirsty for attention that he wanted to steal the limelight from Frank Warren and Bob Arum? Could it be that? Could it be that Eddie Hearn and Anthony Joshua are having second thoughts, getting cold feet and don't really want to fight, and therefore a way that they could get out of it while saving face is to upset the other side so much that it scuppers the deal. And then they've got plausible deniability in terms of walking away. Maybe it's the other way around. Maybe Team Fury have been dragging their feet so much that Eddie Hearn said, you know what, I need to put some pressure on these guys to make their minds up and finalize this deal. Another possibility is that they haven't yet sorted out the TV situation, because it's seemingly a lot more complicated in the United States than it is in the UK, because you've got DAZN, which normally doesn't do pay-per-view, although they did with some of Canelo's recent fights, and ESPN, which does do pay-per-view. So could there be a sticking point there? Another possibility would be that this is some type of ruse by both teams to generate hype. At the end of the day, controversy sells. Maybe they want to keep the fans on the edge of their seats and just turn up the drama. Not that this fight needs that kind of thing, but when you've got greedy businessmen out there, they want to maximize everything. So who knows? We can only speculate. All I can tell you is, I hope these guys get it together, because we all want to see this fight. Now, in terms of the date and the location, certainly the location is no small detail. Both sides have got to be happy, and where this fight takes place will determine how much money everybody gets paid, because the different locations are going to be paying site fees due to the lack of crowds. Now, there might be some crowds in some countries, but it's unlikely to be 100% capacity, regardless of where they go. And then again, actually, by June, July, maybe it will be. We'll see. But they can't predict the future at this point, so they have to keep that in mind. So Saudi Arabia, for example, might be willing to pay, let's say, the most. I don't know. A different country might be willing to pay slightly less, but they might be more agreeable to one camp or the other. There could be other reasons beyond just money, logistical reasons, or just where the fighters and the teams feel comfortable. Could be various different reasons why one side or the other might not simply go to whichever location is paying the most money. You understand? So that definitely needs to be sorted out. And it's disappointing that they've come out, or at least Eddie Hearn and this anonymous Top Rank source have come out and said this, either intentionally or unintentionally. Because, again, it gives people, I don't want to say false hope, but nobody benefits when somebody jumps the gun. You understand, in terms of the fans? We want to hear an announcement when it's 100% done and all parties can come to the table and collectively together say, yeah, the fight's happening. Then it can start running all the promos and all that type of business. But isn't it interesting the way that even Sky took a few little words from Eddie Hearn and said, oh, the fight's on, it's happening. Sky? They're going to be one of the platforms, I'm assuming, that's showing the fight, unless it's DAZN, you know, unless Eddie Hearn leaves Sky and hooks up with DAZN in the UK. So it's interesting the way Sky are even in on this. Again, maybe it's just opportunistic journalism. They understand that it's going to get a lot of traction on the internet. People are going to be visiting the Sky website. Oh, see, Sky is saying it, so it's definitely official. That kind of thing. So, yeah, who knows what's going on here, people? I'd be interested to hear your opinions, your views on why somebody jumped the gun here. Is someone trying to get out of the fight? Is it just a slip of the tongue? Is it ego? Is it all of the above? Let me know what you guys think in the comment section below. Let's just hope that this doesn't lead to the fight getting scuppered. And let's hope they can sort out whatever they need to sort out within the next 30 days. And don't leave it up until the last minute. Also, one thing I will say is Frank Warren, up until today, was sounding very positive about the fight happening. You know, he was making out as though an announcement is imminent. It's literally right next to the line. But now he's saying, actually, no, there's a way to go yet. So he's kind of contradicting himself. If you had listened to what he'd said in previous interviews, Frank Warren is being a little contradictory here. So again, who knows what's really going on behind the scenes? Let's just hope they sort it out. Let me know what you guys think about this in the comments below. I'm out. Andy Ruiz says that he would love to fight Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury. He's already fought Anthony Joshua. And if you class Deontay Wilder and Tyson Fury as the other two out of the top three heavyweights in the world, then you can see why he would pick those two names. Rather than it being anything stylistic or having any issue with either man. Now, the Deontay Wilder fight is high on my list in terms of heavyweight bouts I'd like to see in the very near future. It would be kind of a crossroads fight with both guys coming off losses, although they're likely to have comeback fights before they face each other, assuming they do face each other. Andy Ruiz is apparently fighting Chris Arreola next in a pay-per-view, which I've already spoken about. Pretty bizarre that they would try and sell that one on a pay-per-view, but it is what it is. If he can get past Arreola and look good, and he has sparred Arreola in the past, Andy Ruiz, and Arreola spoke very highly of him at the time in that sparring. If he can get past Arreola, which we all expect him to, and look good, then Deontay Wilder is a great matchup. Will Wilder go straight into a Ruiz fight, or will he want to take a comeback fight? I know they've been talking about Charles Martin, but it doesn't seem to be any movement there. And you really wonder what's going on with Deontay Wilder. Why he hasn't announced a comeback date? I mean, maybe he's reticent. Maybe he's reluctant to go in there against somebody dangerous other than someone who has a belt. Is that what's going on with Deontay Wilder? Who knows? But let me know what you guys think in the comments below. Wilder Ruiz, do you think the fight will happen? We can all talk about who we think would win the fight, but do you think it will happen? If you don't think it will happen, whose fault do you think it is? Will it be Deontay Wilder's fault? Will it be Andy Ruiz's fault? Will it be Al Heyman's fault? Because this is an in-house fight. It shouldn't be that difficult to make. So, yeah, let me know what you guys think about it in the comments below. And also, how do you think Andy Ruiz would fare against Tyson Fury? Because I've spoken in the past about how I think he would do against Wilder, but how do you think he would do against Fury? I think the consensus, I'm assuming, is that he just get completely shut out by Tyson Fury, and he wouldn't really have much chance against him. And I can see the logic in that, but Andy Ruiz does have certain abilities which are unique to him. There's nobody else in the heavyweight division who can apply pressure and counterpunch on the front foot the way that Ruiz does. Yeah, we've got other pressure fighters who are volume punchers. Derek Chisora is a volume puncher. But pressure fighters who counterpunch on the front foot tend to be less common. And Andy Ruiz, I don't want to say he exclusively counterpunches on the front foot, but it seems like he mostly does that. You know, Mike Tyson was good at counterpunching on the front foot, but he would lead off a lot more than Andy Ruiz. Ruiz really does like to wait for you to throw before he throws. And very fast hands on the counter, very sharp. I've been looking at some of the footage of him training at Eddie Reynoso's gym. I think it's great for him to be around Canelo, because a guy like Ruiz, if he's around winners like that, Canelo, Ryan Garcia, these kind of people, it's surely going to inspire him to up his game. Not just in terms of skill and what have you, but his fitness game. Because all those guys are shredded, you know? So, and also Frank Sanchez, who, you know, his real age aside, because I'm sure he's not the age that he claims he is, but either way, he's a fast, athletic heavyweight, Frank Sanchez, a guy who moves a lot, and I think that'll help Andy Ruiz as well if he's sparring him. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing what Andy Ruiz can do, because there's a lot of potential there in Andy Ruiz. If they could get his weight down, and I've seen his legs looking like a powerlifter's legs at the moment. If they could get his weight down and introduce more head movement, because as I've said before, I think because Andy Ruiz is so overweight, he can't really bend at the waist much, okay? Because he's carrying so much padding around the waist. So it's going to reduce his mobility, his ability to actually dip down and, you know, move his upper body from side to side. If they can get a lot of that off and get his weight down, whereby he can still retain his strength, because sometimes when a guy loses a lot of weight, he can feel, you know, drained from all the training of getting that weight off. Sometimes their calorie intake is cut so dramatically that they just don't have the same strength or energy, you know. So if he's lost the weight the right way, assuming he has lost a bunch of weight, we'll see, because Andy Ruiz loves taking those Instagram pictures from a high angle. He loves all that camera trickery, where the camera's pointing down at him and it makes it look like he's a lot slimmer than he really is. You know, maybe that's a red flag right there. Perhaps we should wait until Andy Ruiz is taking pictures from a normal height rather than from a top-down angle. If he's doing it from a normal height, then he's not trying to try any camera trickery, right? So assuming Andy Ruiz gets his weight down to something reasonable, I'm interested to see how good Andy Ruiz can be. So let me know what you guys think about this in the comments below. I'm out. I've been making boxing videos on YouTube for nearly 11 years now. It was the summer of 2010 when I uploaded my first ever video to my old original YouTube channel. During a decade since then, I've made literally thousands more videos. Over the course of this past 11 years, there have been loads of people who have passed away in the world of boxing. Elderly ex-fighters, trainers, journalists, and even some young fighters. But I've made very few RIP videos. Very few, no more than 3 or 4. Those of you who are with me on my original channel, or from the very early days of my new channel, will remember me talking about the reason why I rarely do RIP videos. But this is for the benefit of those who haven't heard me talk about this before. Not that I need to explain myself to anyone, but I want to give you an insight into the way that I think so you can better understand the kind of person I am. I know how tough boxing is. I know how dangerous it is. I know the dedication it takes. I know the kind of discipline, the work ethic, the self-belief, the mental and physical toughness that it requires. I know what it's like to get punched in the face. I know what it's like to take a beating. So I've got the utmost respect for fighters as fighters. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I like them all as people outside the ring. Because I'm not the kind of person to deify someone just because they're talented and famous. For me, a person's worth is determined by their actions, their values, and their principles, not by their talent, their professional achievements, or their bank balance. Most boxers don't do or say anything outside of boxing that would make me value their lives any more highly than the lives of my neighbors on my street. Death is always sad, but when an elderly boxer who I've never met or known personally dies, it's no more of a tragedy to me than if the old guy down the road, who I've also never met, suddenly dies. For all I know, the old guy down the road might have been a much better person. So, I don't want to help reinforce this perception that the lives of the rich and famous are worth more than the lives of everyday people. This is why I don't make RIP videos. There's a couple of channels who I respect and like, people with integrity, who have made RIP videos in the past couple days. And perhaps Marvin Hagler meant something to them on a personal level. But there are a lot of other people in the boxing community and in society in general who will use death and tragedy as an opportunity to virtue signal. They don't really care about the people who die. They just want to gain brownie points and validation from their followers by pretending that they do. The media and the political arena are absolutely awash with these kind of people. And even among the general public, there's millions of these kind of people. You see them on social media all the time. They never give a second thought to the person while they're alive, but as soon as they die, all of a sudden they're acting like they care. It's quite comical. They are purveyors of superficial sanctimony and fake virtue. And if that's the kind of thing you're looking for, then you've definitely come to the wrong place. Because I'm more real than that. The only fighter who ever meant anything to me beyond the sphere of boxing was Muhammad Ali. Because he spoke for millions of people who literally had no voice. He said things which other people wanted to say, but were too afraid. He put himself at great personal risk by speaking out against the establishment at a time when all of his peers were absolutely silent. Frazier, Foreman, etc., they all told the line publicly. Some of them even helped to enforce the line. But Ali wasn't afraid to go against the grain, despite the fact that it cost him the best years of his career and most of his money. He had the gumption to stand on his principles, irrespective of the consequences. A lot of people don't realize that Ali was absolutely despised by the American establishment for most of his career. It was only towards the end, after all his trials and tribulations, that the media begrudgingly started to give him some respect. They'd always respected his fighting ability, but I mean respect as a man. So, as I say, Ali was the only fighter who ever meant anything to me beyond the sphere of boxing. I never met him or knew him, obviously, but his words and actions really resonated with me. Not that he was perfect, he was flawed like we all are, but he demonstrated a lot more intelligence and gumption than any other boxer I've seen. But the rest of these fighters, to me, they're just fighters. They toe the line, secure the bag, and keep it pushing. And that's cool. I'm not expecting them to jeopardize their careers. But what I don't respect is the ones who actively help to enforce the line. And I'm not talking about racism here, folks. This ain't the 1960s. Today, the establishment used the topic of racism as a phony bone of contention to distract people from far more serious issues which affect everyone. It's divide and rule, and the vast majority of the public fall for it. Over the past 12 months, most people in boxing have either stayed silent or have actively helped to enforce the line, wittingly or unwittingly. Only a tiny few have displayed the intelligence, integrity, and gumption to go against the grain. Josh Taylor, George Groves, Terence Crawford, Adam Booth, and even Frank Buglioni. But they're few and far between. The vast majority of human beings on planet Earth are like sheep on a farm. They're under the spell of the herd mentality or the hive mind. It's what Carl Jung called the collective unconscious. And once they're locked into that, they will follow whatever shepherd is leading them, even if it's to their own destruction. That's what they'll do. And this includes educated people with PhDs who would otherwise be considered intelligent. Once they're locked into this collective unconscious, their normal cognitive faculties are severely compromised. The hive mind subverts, possesses, and controls the conscious mind of the individual. This is why the vast majority of people conform to the status quo, even if it defies logic and reason to do so. They will simply follow whatever the majority are doing, either within their circle or wider society. This is why history always repeats itself. This is why history is repeating itself right now, and the vast majority of people are oblivious to it. They will often attack and ridicule those who refuse to surrender their independent cognitive processes to the collective subconscious influence of the hive mind. In other words, people who have the ability to think for themselves. Anyway, I'll leave it there.